You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being here with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen, on the couch, as you always are on Wednesdays, wherever you're at in the world. Thank you so much for joining in. And today we're talking about a subject which is one of my favorites, especially in psychology, because I do work with a lot of folks who have perfectionistic issues, or sometimes OCD, whatever you want to call it. A lot of it's related, and we're going to find out a lot about it today. You know, perfectionism is usually considered more of an asset than a liability in our society, probably around the world in many cultures. It's usually considered, high achievers, results that exceed expectations. But according to my special guest, psychologist Dr. Greg Chausson, there he is. Although minimal perfectionism can yield some positive outcomes, perfectionistic tendencies could be so disabling that they obstruct basic activities in life. They can destroy businesses. And we're going to get into why this happens and dig deeper into the paralyzing concept of having to be perfect. And my guest, and there he is, Dr. Chausson. He's going to be talking about his book as well. It's called Flawed. There it is. Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management. This is such a great subject. Thank you so much for coming on the couch today, Greg. It's super to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to discuss it.
So before the show, briefly, we were talking to the owner, Sam, and we were also talking to you about, and me, we all raised our hands about perfectionistic behaviors. So, what? I mean, it is, it's good and it's bad. And we'll talk about that and also how it affects companies and management and all that. But first, without further ado, I want to share who you are and what you've done. And there's so much about you and your background that is amazing. We could take about half an hour, but I'll do it as quickly and as briefly as I can. But I do want folks to know who you are. And Dr. Chausson is a licensed clinical psychologist, board certified cognitive behavioral therapist, associate professor, and the director of behavioral interventions of the Obsessive Compulsive and Related Disorders Clinic in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience at the University of Chicago. Now, over the past couple of decades, Dr. Chausson has produced and provided cognitive behavioral therapy for clinically severe perfectionism and has owned and operated two mental health practices. And of course, you're an active scholar. You have co-authored more than 70 scientific papers, also another book we're going to share with you, and his latest book, Flawed. And there are more accolades, but that'll give you an idea of what you're going to learn today, because this gentleman right here, Greg Chausson, is an expert. He knows what he's talking about, and his latest book is amazing. So now, as I mentioned earlier, we're talking about the concept of being perfectionistic and, how company leaders make the mistake of really encouraging that kind of behavior. I always like to find out about my guests and what their personal reasons are for writing their books or really focusing on, a certain kind of career. So what was it, Greg, that made you want to write this book?
That's a good question. I think that I had been seeing perfectionism hamper people's lives for many, many years.
Yeah.
It's not just OCD that it's connected with, but I see a lot of it in the OCD world. Wow. I also have struggled a little bit myself with perfectionism, not to the degree that I've seen in my clinic, but I can certainly appreciate it. Especially when you write a book, you can appreciate it even more. I think the reasons are that I was helping people one-to-one with this. I was developing, based on the research literature and the clinical approach, what seems to resonate with people, what is moving them past a perfectionistic framework and allowing them to succeed and move forward. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, one-to-one is great, but this message needs to get out. I mean, I think there's a growing toxic achievement culture, and we need to fight against that to some degree. And I think anti-perfectionism is a way to do that.
Boy, beautifully said. I mean, I was impressed with it. And, you know, I see like my niece in second grade, everything, you know, we were coloring the other day. And she said, stay in the lines, auntie, stay in the lines. And she was very sad because I didn't stay in the lines. And I thought, uh-oh, this one's in trouble. So,
and you know what we would do in treatment? I would have her sit down and I would have her scribbling all over the page.
That's right. And we're going to talk about how you encourage bosses to, you know, let people make more mistakes, make mistakes. It's cool to do that.
You know? On purpose.
On purpose. I love that. That was great. I really enjoyed how you talked about Michael J. Fox as well. You quoted him, and he suggests that the term perfectionism is confounded with excellence and high standards. And you go on to add that much of society overvalues perfectionism, of course, if we've talked about that. And I guess where does that stem from originally? I mean, I
think that we're such a... I think we're such a social species that we really are embedded in this this environment where we're constantly thinking about how other people are thinking of us and how we compare to people. And I think social media has just, you know, stoked that beyond recognition. I think that it's accelerated beyond recognition. But I think it's always been there, and we're always comparing ourselves, upward and downward comparisons. Yeah.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, that coupled with genetic and biological components like neuroticism, I think we have the perfect recipe for people who get stuck trying to be perfect.
Oh, boy, that's so true. Well, I mean, also going psychological here, and how are folks, you know, who end up as adults, as we have, who are perfectionistic or wanting, just make sure that everything is just, you know, and we feel off. Are they taught that usually by the parents? Is it an inherited thing? Maybe like a perfectionistic style? What is that about? I know it's societal and what they expect, but I guess, where does that come from in the individual?
I think it's a mix of the biological and the environmental. I think parenting definitely plays a role to the degree that parents can model the overvaluing of perfection and achievement. And I think that we absolutely need to be careful with that kind of modeling. Yeah. And I think we see beyond parenting. We see it in schools. We see it on the playground. We see it, you know, in the office. We see it everywhere. And I think children soak these things up. And they'll start to think that this is the most important thing that there is to get that A or to succeed.
Yeah.
And I think it just spreads from there. And it gets reinforced, right? So you do really, you put all that effort in, you overkill a task, and then you get that great grade, everyone's going to think you're dynamite, and they're going to give you praise. Well, what does that do? Well, that makes it so that you do the same thing again the next time. And this just grows over time to the point where you become overwhelmed with all the things that require that, because you have a hard time realizing that not everything does.
Right. Exactly. So, and you want to make it very clear in your book, by the way, that you're not slamming perfectionism or perfectionists. You're not doing that. So maybe let's start out as well by talking about some of the positive features of perfectionism, right?
Yeah.
There are the positives, right?
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. I always worry that writing a book like this and putting a message out that people are going to feel alienated or attacked. I do not think in any way that perfectionists should be weeded out of the work environment. I think they're going to be some of your best employees, actually.
Yeah.
I think they bring some tremendous qualities a lot of the time. Conscientiousness, which if there's a single ingredient I would want in an employee, it's that. Mm-hmm. You have attention to detail, which often is a nice compliment to big picture thinkers. I think honesty and loyalty are very common among perfectionists. Yeah. I would not in any way or form recommend trying to not hire or get rid of perfectionists. I think what the book is trying to push is how do you manage perfectionism from the top down and the bottom up? So to create a new culture or a better culture. And then also how do you help individual employees that struggle with perfectionism in a way that cultivates their strengths and then mitigates the damage from their perfectionism.
Right. So employers kind of like enjoy when folks say, I'm a perfectionist. Mm. I work with a lot of young adults who are caught in the craziness of a lot of huge companies right now. And a lot of them are jumping ship because they're not backfilling a lot of people who've been fired. Salaries are not being increased. A lot of things are being promised, and yet more work is piling on for them. I'm sure you've experienced the same thing, you know, and heard the same thing. And they're not young adults necessarily. They're all ages of folks who are in the workplace and have been with companies for a long time, major companies, a lot of them out here and in the Silicon Valley. But you say to maybe back off on that a little bit when you're going for an interview with another company, and don't push this perfectionism too hard, right?
Yeah, well, I think that there are two types of
people. And you also ask. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say I think that there are people who answer the question in interviews, what's your greatest weakness? And the answer that everyone thinks of is, I'm a perfectionist. I think that that's often used as a cavalier response. They're trying to flip it so it sounds like a strength. When it's, I think there are people, those folks probably don't have true perfectionism, or if they do, they're trying to use it and spin it. People with real difficult perfectionism, where they get paralyzed on their day-to-day tasks, this is not something that they like to advertise. They tend to be quite ashamed of it. They know it slows them down. Oh. They don't see it as a cute little limitation. Right. So when I hear that in an interview, I almost, maybe I shouldn't, but I assume it's more of a cavalier response and rather than a true limitation. But I'll always ask more. I don't stop there because I know about perfectionism. I'm like, are you sure you want to go down this avenue? Tell me what you mean by that.
Right. Exactly. What you talk about the cognitive rigidity, right? What is that about?
Yeah, it's just a jargony term for saying that people get really stuck thinking about, you know, having a mindset, having a hard time being flexible around that, not pivoting when it's necessary. A one-track mind. Sometimes you could suggest that it means being stubborn. I don't know if that's the best word for it, but the idea is that these people have a hard time. It's like the Titanic having a hard time shifting when it's headed towards the iceberg.
And,
you know, you see this in family, you see it in coworkers.
Right. We sure do.
Evidence could be smacking them in the face and they're not changing.
Oh, yeah. So how can our own perfectionistic like tendencies impact our personal relationships and, of course, our work relationships and our lives in general? I mean, how can this, you know, we've seen it, we've experienced it ourselves, we discussed earlier, but what are some of the examples that you see? How can it impact everything around us?
I think dramatically, and I don't know that people understand the sort of core driving force that sometimes is perfectionism. Perfectionism tends to draw people in. It tends to affect everyone around us. A common perfectionistic tendency is to do what's called a safety behavior, which is where you engage in something to try to calm your anxiety that comes from the perfectionism.
Right.
So this can include things like checking over and over and over again. Did I do this right? Did I not do this right? Is this what they're looking for? Or seeking reassurance to that effect. How does this look? Did I do okay? You know, and then, or there's just procrastination, pushing things off because it doesn't feel right or it doesn't look right, and not meeting deadlines and upsetting the people around you. So I think that absolutely creates a difficult environment.
Yeah, exactly. It sure does. And as I've said in the past, and I didn't bring it up yet, but go ahead. I do get emails from viewers, listeners, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So throughout the show, if you all have a question or a comment or whatever, some of my regulars have already obsessively jumped on the stream here. So straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And we're going to ask that. By the way, my special guest is Dr. Greg Chasson. I mispronounced it. He's a psychologist, professor, director of behavioral interventions of the OCD and Related Disorders Clinic at the University of Chicago, and many, many more. We're talking about his latest book, Flawed, Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management. And not only that, he goes into individual perfectionism and how it does affect our lives. So, you know, one of the comments that Came in a short while ago from one of my regulars, said, is OCD the same as perfectionism?
It's a wonderful question. The answer is no, but there's a lot of overlap. OCD, people with OCD can exhibit a lot of perfectionism, but there are tons of people with perfectionism that don't have OCD.
Right.
Now, the distinction is really academic sometimes, but really it's about the level of ownership of the thoughts. So if the thoughts pop in and they feel alien to you, like you don't want them, and you feel like you have to do things, and you think that they're unreasonable and that bad things will happen if you don't, and they feel like they're trespassing in your head, that would be more of an OCD presentation.
Right.
If the thoughts feel standard to you, they feel like they're consistent with your values or your sense of self, that people should just be doing things this way, it should be done that way, that is probably less of an OCD presentation and more of a personality disposition.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much, Jeanette, for writing in. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
that's great. We have some more questions coming up, but I want to get back to your book. You write about the different ways in which, you know, perfectionism can manifest in employees specifically, such as showing anxiety, like you just mentioned, before, during, and after a job task, particularly novel or complex ones. And there's avoidance, makes us anxious, and all that kind of thing. So maybe share some of the other ways that folks who are watching, who exhibit these behaviors or feel these things, don't feel like they're going crazy or are alone. So like having to submit those perfect, pristine products, but they're late, right? Or freezing with dread, that kind of thing. So what are some of the other ways that, you know, this can manifest in the workplace for folks?
I really talk about five primary bigger picture problems that I think warrant their own chapters clearly in the book. I could go through all of them, but they are things such as having difficulty prioritizing tasks, trouble with the processes and getting stuck. I call it process paralysis, trying to optimize the process and the steps. The third is what I call confounding rules and principles, the idea that people tend not to appreciate the underlying principles of a rule, and they enforce it so rigidly that sometimes it doesn't make sense given the principle.
Right.
And then I talk about cognitive rigidity, which we talked about earlier.
Right.
And the last one is what I call other-oriented moralism, which is not something you see with every perfectionist, but sometimes perfectionism projects outward and you start to hold other people to these rigid, excessive standards.
Right.
And they could be about morals, which really, you know, if you're holding other people to moral standards in a rigid and excessive way, what happens is that you start to look like you're policing other people, peers, when it's not your job. And it really creates a toxic environment for everyone.
Sure.
And really, it can look like the person's coming across in a self-righteous way.
No, it's true. You know, I mean, they're, you know, afraid of their losing their jobs. They're afraid of, you know, and they want to come off a certain way of management and or as an employee. So you say then, as we discussed earlier, maybe employers should encourage their employees or managers to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's cool. Go ahead now. And why would you say that?
I think that it's important part of fighting perfectionism for people to do exercises where they loosen their thinking and learn that making mistakes is not catastrophic and that they can handle the distress that might come from.
Yeah, sure.
And I use an exposure therapy worldview for doing this. It's not exposure therapy because it's not necessarily a therapy session, but the principles can be applied, and it's about gradually, systematically, and with their consent, asking them to engage in increasingly difficult mistake making, where they are being asked to do little things that are mistakes. Maybe you sign off an email incorrectly. Maybe you send it to Jim in receivables instead of Jim in accounting, your email. And so like these little mistakes that you build on from in a systematic way. So by the end, they're doing more challenging things. You see my cat in the background. There are little things that you can do and build on to help them get more flexibility in their thinking, and this will in the long run Make it so that they have a more nuanced worldview.
Oh, that, you know, that's a great idea. I just had another email here, and it's pertaining to what you just said, Greg. Josh, I was trying to figure out. Okay, so on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, Josh just said, sometimes when I make mistakes at work, I look at my emails and the mistakes that I've done, and I have these chills of feeling horrified. Oh, no, I get that. After I sent it to the wrong person,
right,
or misspelled some things, what do I do?
Well, if you sent an email, you can't really do much about that. So part of my book is about, I mean, at the core of my book is really about this idea of control. How much control do you have over these situations? And I think people with perfectionism think they have more control than they really have. You know, you're going to make mistakes no matter how much energy you put in to trying to not make them. And sometimes, and actually I believe this to be true, the more you try not to make mistakes, the more likely you are to actually make them, because you're just so fixated that you're not seeing the big picture and you end up bungling it. So how do you handle that situation? I think it's just more practice. Go do, like I said, make mistakes. And I know it sounds a little bit like, oh, who's this quack of a doc? Go make mistakes. But if you do it in a systematic way, it does get easier and it becomes less catastrophic.
Yeah.
And you're never going to like making mistakes. That's not the goal. The goal is so that it doesn't become so cringeworthy when you catch it.
Yeah, right. Or as Josh said, horrifying.
Horrifying. God. Right. Yeah.
Ooh, that's not good. We're not laughing. I'm not laughing at you, Josh. I get it is why I'm laughing. I've been there. You know, I've been there and done that. Dr. Chawson, do people who have perfectionistic tendencies judge other people if they make mistakes more so than other people who don't have them?
It depends. Sometimes they have what's called self-oriented perfectionism, where it's really all about themselves. They actually do not hold other people to those same standards. And the double standard is in the opposite direction. They hold themselves to much higher standards than everyone else.
Yeah.
Then there's this other oriented perfectionism. Yeah. I was alluding to this with the moralism that they hold other people to these standards. Those are the folks that tend to be a little bit more judgy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's perhaps they feel shame within themselves, or they're so, you know, into their own, if you want to say, perfectionistic ways that they're, oh, that person did this or what, you know, so it's maybe there's that shame that's coming through within them, and it subliminally makes them feel better to shame other people for not being perfect. I don't know.
It's a good hypothesis. I don't know the answer to that specifically, but I do know is that shame, which I think is a very underappreciated paralyzing agent for most people.
Yes.
Probably the worst emotion out there, in my opinion.
I agree.
It's a huge part of perfectionism and this sort of connection to imposter syndrome and the idea that we're not good enough. Powerful. And if we know anything, shame is one of those things we will do anything to get rid of. Anything.
Boy, is that true. And that stems from early on.
Yeah.
Early on in our, you know, upbringing. It's really important to know that. I mean, it really is. I agree with you. I think shame is just the worst thing we can have because it affects our whole lives, you know, depending, of course, on the environment. But then if we have that added element of feeling like we have to be perfect and everything. And by the way, there is no perfect, is there ever? What is perfect?
Well, besides LA Talk Radio.
I love you. I love this.
Besides LA Talk Radio, no.
Okay, I love it. You, I don't know about you, but every time when I do a show, sometimes I don't like to rewatch it fully, but I will listen to it. And it's like, oh, I should have said that, or oh, I shouldn't have done that. And what should people do when they think these things? Or, I shouldn't have. And we're not talking necessarily about making grammatical errors or, you know, writing something. It's like when they're verbalizing something and they didn't say something perfectly, or they're always being self-aware of how they come across. What are some ways that people can sort of manage that?
I think a couple of ways. One is not to avoid. It's a tendency to just avoid doing those things in general because you're worried about it. I think that's a recipe for putting yourself into a shoebox and not experiencing the world. Sure. So I would encourage people to move forward, even if they have those fears. I would say, you know, not over-checking and excessively reviewing things over and over again. Although not listening to yourself also is probably an avoidance strategy. So there's got to be a Goldilocks thing in there.
Sure.
And then I think in general, using your values to contextualize how important something really is. And I think values are a good starting point. What's important to you? What's important to the people around you? And then ask yourself, does this task really require everything I've got? Does it need to be like nearly perfect or excellent?
Right.
Or can this just be a get or done kind of a task?
Or
is this a task that I don't even need to do because it's not consistent with my values? And so you have to make those choices. And the problem with perfectionism is that everyone is trying to, they're trying to do everything perfectly. Everything is done with 110%. And what happens is that they end up not being able to do that. Shocker. It's impossible, right? And then these things that are potentially important get pushed off because you can't do everything 110%. And so what happens is that your perfectionism is dictating your behavior and your values and telling you what it's important to do rather than your actual values and what's important to you.
Right. Right. So, you know, and also you give a shout out to Aisha Tyler for discovering the key principle in the fight against perfectionism. And you talk about how it's prioritizing tasks based on our values. So that was really great information because I think a lot of people don't think that. You have to pull back and really have some self-awareness or cognitive behavioral self-treatment and say, what's really important here? What can I prioritize? What can I put on the back burner? And, you know, what's really necessary? Because I think perfectionistic people tend to try to do it all. Or we have to.
They tend to be very all or none in how they approach things. And that is an absolute troublemaker of a thought, and you need to get in there and really work on that for people.
I hear you. I think it's a great idea. Speaking about the workplace, so a lot of folks who I talk to, they don't know, they're so afraid of losing their jobs at this present time. They don't like their jobs, many of them, but they're doing the best they can. They have perfectionistic tendencies. And they're working with management companies or individuals who are perfectionistic and demanding a lot. So how can we set boundaries with some of these perfectionistic managers?
Well, I think you ship them a crate of these and you ship it to them, these books. And working with a difficult manager, you could write volumes just on that alone, but if they're perfectionistic, I do offer some options and ideas in my 10th chapter, which flips the script. Instead of a perfectionistic employee,
right?
You know, how do you lead them? It's like, how do employees deal with a perfectionistic leader?
Right.
There's really, you got to first recognize how much control you have. I mean, if you're the one that doesn't have the power in the dynamic, it's challenging. So you want to be careful about retaliation and all those things. But there are ways of addressing this, you know, work on assertiveness skills, learn how to communicate in a respectful way that's effective. Pick your battles. Don't try to fight everything. This is, you know, nobody likes being, you know, reminded incessantly about what they should or should not be doing or things that are wrong. Do it not in public. Don't call the leader out for being excessive or unreasonable in public.
Right.
Set them aside, have a respectful conversation. You know, and practice those communication skills. They can do wonders, but they don't guarantee that you're going to change anybody.
Right.
But you might be able to slowly build some change in your workplace. And in the end of the day, you just, how much control do you have? If nothing changes, the option you might have is to dust off your resume.
Yeah. Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
As if we still have paper resumes that we need to dust off. But you know.
Sure. Right. I get it. No, I know what you're saying. Exactly. By the way, folks, if you just kind of tuned in, if you're watching us or listening to us, my special guest in here is a man who has done everything and really in terms of focusing on helping people with perfectionistic behaviors, consciousness, also OCD and other such issues, you know, is Dr. Greg Chausson. He's a psychologist, professor, and director of behavioral interventions of the Obsessive Compulsive and Related Disorders Clinic at the University of Chicago, published over 70 papers. And of course, he's written another book too, which is about perfectionism and OCD. What is the name of your other book that folks can pick up if they would like to?
Yeah, I mean, this book, the other book is an academic book written for people who are clinicians that would who want to learn how to provide CBT or cognitive behavior therapy for hoarding disorder. It's one of my areas of specialty.
Yes.
Perfectionism, interestingly, is connected to hoarding. People don't realize this. A lot of people with hoarding are perfectionistic, which blows people's minds. And in the book, I very briefly talk about that in flawed. But it is an area of love for mine, is hoarding and how to treat it. And I do think it connects on the perfectionism level, but the previous book is really designed for teaching people who are budding clinicians or current clinicians.
Right.
It's called Hoarding Disorder, Advances in Psychotherapy, published by Hogreth in Germany.
And I have an intelligent audience, so they'll want to read that too. I have a lot of folks who are clinicians out there and who love my guests who are specialists such as yourself, great authors, psychologists, people who've been there, done that, and studied specialties. The book, by the way, that we're talking about today is Flawed, Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management. You know, you can get that book anywhere you would like. So that would be really great. I did get an email here. I'm looking on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Jacob, thank you so much for writing in. Says, what is the deep psychological issue behind not being good enough or having to be perfectionistic?
It's hard to know. I think it probably varies from person to person, and there could be a number of reasons that this develops or motivations from seeking approval of the people around you, like your parents or teachers, or maybe it's just a straight up fear response to living the thought that they might end up living under a bridge and not having a future and a career. There could be a number of deep seated concerns here. I really think a lot of it stems from the anxiety and then the rigid thinking, those tendencies coupled with an environment that really pushes achievement. Now you do, but the thing is you see perfectionism in people that have the most flexible parents, the ones that don't really truly care about any of this. This is the thing, perfectionism has so many different components. So some people it's all self-derived, all of it.
Yeah.
For some people it's socially prescribed, meaning they feel like the perfectionism is being pushed on them. And we see this all the time in the media, you know, fashion magazines, social media, you know, you see this. And that is a pressure that I think is constant and if not growing. But then you got the people who are then projecting it on other people. So you got these different variations that I think might have different developmental features. As a cognitive behavior therapist, I don't really dive into unconscious conflicts and things of that nature.
Sure.
I wouldn't begin to speculate on that, but I do understand at the CBT level, the cognitive and behavioral level, that there is this interplay between this probably genetic propensity for anxiety and this high achievement culture and need, plus potential reinforcement from the environment, like, good job, you did a nice job on that assignment,
right.
Feeling like that's what you need to do in the future.
Right, exactly. A lot of people, I think that's a great example too. A lot of people talk about, I feel like, you know, when I'm talking to them and they're many times talking about the companies and how they feel that they aren't good enough. And also they don't know how to go about pulling back on their perfectionism because they want the accolades from management and all that. But, they also talk about how people say, my God, you're so sensitive to them. You know, don't be so sensitive. In other words, they're sort of there's like a perceived slight or something because they're preoccupied with doing what is right or perfect or should be done. And then when someone intimates to them that it's really not, then they pull back or they get angry. There's a lot of anger that comes out in our sessions about this asshole or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, maybe we should look at your own perception about how perfect you need to be. And they're not thinking that necessarily.
Yeah.
Guiding you, perhaps.
Yeah. So, and I do talk about that. There's this oversensitivity to criticism. Yeah. And I think nobody likes criticism. I think people pretend like it's fine, but no one likes to hear that they didn't do something right.
No.
But I think it's a matter of degree. How much does it really upset you? And how do you take it? Do you take it as an opportunity to grow and learn? Or do you see it as an attack and somebody that's out to get you? And I think those are very important distinctions. And people with perfectionism, they tend to be oversensitive. They may not think it's an attack, but they then some of them tend to internalize it as if they are just garbage and can't do anything right.
Right.
So absolutely, if you see somebody that's oversensitive in this way, you might start having some hypotheses, that perfectionism is at play.
Yes. No, that makes a lot of sense. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the radio. Thank you so much for joining us here on latalkradio.com and also live via our StreamYard virtual studios. My special guest is Dr. Greg. I don't know what's going on with this today. I need to be perfect.
Yeah.
Dr. Chawson, come help me. I need your help. He's a psychologist, professor, and director of behavioral interventions of the Obsessive Compulsive and Related Disorders Clinic at the University of Chicago. Written over 70 published papers. And of course, we're talking about his latest book. It's really terrific. It's called Flawed, Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management. Managers and employees and individuals alike, you should all pick up this book because it really will kind of help you get a handle on what we're talking about in terms of perfectionism, especially in this society, right, Greg? I mean, it's just so, I don't know about you, but I didn't have this social media pressure growing up. I just had hard copy resumes. We were just beginning to send over our resumes on the internet. That was really something. But I mean, it was my mother called it the interweb.
The interweb. Right.
So anyway, the thing is here is that, it's to me, and I'm sure to you, that's because you're probably very busy. It's rampant in our society. Perfectionism, obsessive compulsive issues. You don't have to have the full clinical diagnosis for an OCD disorder, but boy, a lot of folks who have the perfectionism exhibit those behaviors, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's where I see a lot of this. I'm at the University of Chicago, which tends to attract a certain type of individual. And
interesting.
High achievers, super brilliant, but a lot of perfectionism, and they come in my office and I have perfectionism coming out of my ears. It's all over. And I probably have a biased sample because of that. Being at the University of Chicago, but it feels like it's everywhere and it feels like it's getting worse. And the research supports that the perfectionism in society is getting worse. And so I don't think this is going away anytime soon. And I think we need some new messaging, which is why I wrote the book.
Yeah, you do. And some of that messaging is
go ahead.
No, you go.
Use your values as a compass. Make sure that you abide by principles rather than rules. Be careful with how you project out your moralistic reasoning and yourself, and try to be careful with self-righteousness. And loosen your thinking. Be flexible in the way that you think about things. Essentially, anti-perfectionism. Create an environment of anti-perfectionism for your employees. And if you're struggling yourself with perfectionism, it's truly getting in the way, it might be time to go get some expert help.
That's really good advice. I love that. Looking here on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, Callie writes in, thanks, Michelle, for having this guy on your show today. This guy is Dr. Greg Chawson. She said, is perfectionism about unresolved issues with control that I have? Good question. I like that. I don't know what unresolved issues are. I wish you'd write more.
Yeah.
You can write back and tell us what some of those things are. But It's all you, Dr. Johnson.
Well, this could be a pretty unsatisfying answer, but probably the answer is maybe. Without knowing more information, it's hard to know. But what I can assure you is that control is at the heart of a lot of this. So I think anxiety in general is this misperception of control. People tend to think they have more control over things than they really have. Right. And so they walk around doing things that they and try to establish some level of control, even if it's a fantasy, right? I might count to three to protect myself. Or if I do X, it's going to protect me from Y. I mean, in general, we often don't have that kind of control over things. Where it's funny is because I think depression is the opposite. I think people have more control than they realize that they do.
Right.
And so really, it's about finding that balance. And I think in the case of perfectionism, which is largely about helplessness and control, it really is just this huge ocean of people trying to control things that they can't. And so if there is some core origin to this, it probably comes from this idea that they've learned that they can control these things, or that they are trying to and they don't have it realized that this control is unattainable. It's certainly worth exploring more, and I think it's probably individual. Like, each individual probably has their own story.
Right. Well, thanks so much for writing in, folks. Perfectionism and tendencies to, you know, self-doubt and all that, that causes depression and anxiety, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, as you said, if folks are just overwhelmed with these feelings and that they're not enough of enough, or just, you know, really struggling and it's showing up in their personal and professional life, go see a specialist, and also pick up Dr. Greg Chawson's book, because the flawed is, it's really good. And you are not flawed. It's not your fault. Okay. I just had to throw that in. I always say that.
Actually, I think everyone is flawed. It's not that you're not flawed. It's just that everyone is flawed, then nobody's flawed. Like, it doesn't, right? Like, what's the standard?
You're right. And it's okay.
Yeah.
Right? It's okay to be flawed. It's
like I said, everything is flawed except for LA Talk Radio.
Oh, bless your heart. You're the best. I love that. I'm always fascinated in hoarding. I think that's why the show is so popular right now, that it's huge. They're doing reruns as well, called Hoarding. How closely is that associated with obsessive compulsive disorder?
Yeah, I kind of consider them siblings. They used to be considered this, you know, OCD used to it still has subtypes, and hoarding used to be one of them. Yeah. But they've since redefined it so that hoarding stands alone.
Yeah.
Is its own condition. In fact, there's only one other place in the entire manual of psychiatric disorders that talks about it, and that's in the personality disorder section under the OCPD, or personality disorder.
Right.
I think that the taking hoarding out of the OCD conditions was a smart move. I think there's a lot of things about it that are separate from OCD. Yeah. That being said, I think the overlap is still there. There's plenty. I think it's fine to consider it part of the same family of conditions, but they do warrant different treatments, and they do have differences in the way that they present.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. And to your point also, Callie, who wrote in recently, there is that whole component of being out of control and loss of something. I don't know what that is. You and I really don't want to unfold that right now, but it's really true. So in your book, you cover so much, which is great, and it's laid out perfectly. It also asks a lot of questions. A lot of people can consider things about themselves and or their management style at work and how they can be better people. What is some of the best advice that you can give to people who are more perfectionistic in their lives, in their personal and their professional and in all parts of their life?
Yeah. I think, again, to come back to control, I would, if I could get away with one phrase or comment to give someone, it would be to give up some of that control, to relinquish it. I think it's not about more control. I think they need to give up some of that control. And so I'll tell people, use that control and give up some of the control. Use your control to relinquish it. I think people are just trying too hard to not be perfect, or to be perfect, and in doing so, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're sort of bungling it up, because, you know, they're trying to be perfect, which is just not possible.
Yeah. No, it's really so true. On that note, Deirdre here says, she said, how can I control my panic symptoms when I do things that are not perfect?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a whole other show.
But I would say there's an example of trying to control things that probably aren't totally within your control.
Right.
And so we'll do panic disorder treatment or panic treatment. And a lot of it is about giving up that control and sitting with the symptoms of panic when they do occur without catastrophizing them, mm-hmm. which can feel like an invalidating approach, but it can work very well for people to realize that, you know, there are things that they can control and things that they can't. And there can be something powerful about recognizing, oh, you mean I shouldn't try to do something about this and I should just sit with it? And it's really uncomfortable, but it does work. And if somebody's really struggling with panic, there are some excellent treatments out there for it. And I would suggest someone go get that help.
One of my favorite words, thank you for answering that. That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite word is allow.
Yeah.
Allow those feelings to roll out.
Yeah.
And you do have control and you will not die from this panic attack that you're having. You will be okay.
Yeah. You can control your behavior.
You don't have to get a paper
stack. Right.
That's right. You can
not get,
there's so many different.
A lot of people think they'll lose control and do something awful. And
Yeah, exactly. So some of the other good advice and topics that you offer in your book, you know, are just realizing your own values, you know, be an observer to the management style, mm-hmm. you know, and also see if you're a good fit for them, because, you know, if you have tendencies that are perfectionistic and the company is really emphasizing that, as you talk about in your book, a lot of companies coming in are really pushing that a lot. See if that works for you, right? See if that would be a good fit for you,
yeah.
because it can make things worse, actually, if you're not prepared to deal with that. Right?
I think so. The onboarding can be the first spot where people see this, right. The job advertisement, the onboarding, the employee orientation, the handbook, the culture of your peers and the training and the mentoring could all exude perfectionism, which I think can then establish this culture and this expectation that immediately sucks the enthusiasm out of the person that just got hired and can make them feel like this is unreachable, that it's rigid, that it's not a place where they're feeling warm and fuzzy and excited to be a part of. And I think that that's a really unfortunate work culture. I think it really, you know, slows productivity, which is a huge problem. And ultimately, I think it snuffs out innovation and creativity. People feel like they just have to stay like color in the lines, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I see that as not a super healthy approach. I mean, it'll work for some people that like the rigidity and like the predictability, but I think you're going to have a pretty ho-hum level of productivity and you know, prosperity.
Right. Right. And of course, the more, you know, managers, companies really push that, you know, onto their employees, especially if the folks are a little more self-conscious or, you know, perfectionistic themselves, there's a lot of resentment that can go on and it just builds. And that's what, I don't know about you, Dr. Chasson, but that's what I'm seeing a lot with, you know, patients, is that whole feeling of resentment coming out,
right?
Especially for big corporations.
Yep. Resentment to me is one of those results that occurs from this type of environment. And I think it leads to all sorts of awful things. Quiet quitting is probably a function of resentment.
Yep.
Turnover rates are probably a function of resentment. Getting blasted for your work culture on the internet is probably a function of resentment.
Yeah.
I think resentment is probably a driving force for a lot of really bad outcomes for a workplace.
I agree. Well, listen, what is the best way folks can find out more about you, Dr. Greg Chasson, and get your book?
Yeah, thank you. You could go to my website, www.gregchasson.com, C-H-A-S-S is in Samantha, O-N is in Nancy.com. You can go check out the book at flawedbook.com. flawedbook.com, which is a bit of a funny URL, but flawedbook.com. You can get the first couple of chapters and get a sneak peek at my website, which I said earlier, and give it a whirl. And if, you know, feel free to shoot out, find me on social media, reach out via email, whatever you'd like to do. I'm happy to connect with people. And if your company is looking for people to come in and kind of think about their framework and whether their employees are getting stuck and how to unstuck them, give me a shout out. Give me a holler.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much for being a guest today. I love your wisdom. I really enjoyed reading your book and I learned a lot from it too. So.
Oh, I appreciate that praise. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Take it easy and keep on helping those people. Beautiful work. Sure. Thank you, doctor.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining me here on the couch on LA Talk Radio. As I always say, take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for other people. Bye-bye now.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
An Israeli authority figure conveyed that the government is actively working to avert potential arrest warrants from the International Criminal Court targeting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other high-ranking officials.
The ICC, headquartered in The Hague, Netherlands, affirmed that an ongoing independent investigation in relation to the situation in the state of Palestine is underway, but the ICC would have no further comment to make at this stage. Reports suggest Israel is now pursuing diplomatic avenues in an effort to prevent the issuance of such warrants. Benjamin Wright reporting.
In a surprising visit to Kyiv, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg reassured Ukrainian President Zelensky that assistance was forthcoming following a winter marred by incremental Russian advances in their invasion of the neighboring nation.
Acknowledging delays by the United States and other allies in providing additional aid to Ukraine, Stoltenberg commended the country's valiant defense in limiting Moscow's successes and expressed confidence in their prospects for turning the tide. Joseph Eckerson reporting.
A proposal championed by Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz to provide airport security escorts for lawmakers faced obstruction.
The provision, part of the Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization, would have facilitated special security escorts at airports for legislators and judges facing credible threats. However, the plan encountered objections from House Homeland Security ranking member Representative Benny Thompson, resulting in its failure, according to The Hill. Jim Kender reporting.
The Biden administration announced substantial fines against four of the nation's largest wireless carriers for illegally disseminating information about their customers' locations.
The fines, totaling nearly $200 million, were levied against AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon after an investigation revealed they had sold access to their customers' location information to third-party aggregators and location-based service providers, the Federal Communications Commission stated in a statement. Jessica Oakley reporting.
This is the latest news headlines.
An American tourist facing over a decade of imprisonment in the Turks and Caicos Islands after ammunition was discovered in his luggage said he's striving to FaceTime with his children back home as frequently as possible in case he ultimately ends up incarcerated.
Watson is out on bail, but he said he can't leave the country and has to check in at a local police station twice a week. He's facing a potential mandatory minimum sentence of 12 years behind bars. Wade Addison reporting.
The Supreme Court rejected an appeal from Elon Musk challenging a settlement with securities regulators that requires him to obtain prior approval for certain social media posts related to Tesla, the electric vehicle company he leads.
The justices did not provide commentary in upholding lower court rulings against Musk, who argued that the requirement amounts to prior restraint on his speech in violation of the First Amendment. The case stems from messages Musk posted on Twitter in 2018, in which he claimed he had secured funding to take Tesla private. Liam White reporting.
It's been nearly 1 month since California raised the minimum wage at certain restaurants, shedding light on a course correction that many view as long overdue.
The newly elevated compensation benchmark marks a pivotal juncture for restaurants to remain competitive in an already challenging post-pandemic landscape. The industry, renowned for its thin margins, is once again being pushed to make monetary and operational adjustments to stay afloat. all without compromising consumer expectations. Kyle Norris reporting.
In 2022, video footage of a great-grandmother thwarting a robbery outside her California home went viral. Now she's running for city council.
Faye Taylor could be seen charging out of her home and throwing a cane at a man who was allegedly trying to steal an elderly woman's purse. Now, 77-year-old Taylor, who works as a longshoreman at the Port of Oakland, says she's running for Oakland City Council, District 3, after witnessing what she says is an uptick in crime in her community. Paul Gomez reports.
And that's the latest news headline. Lines with Alan Edwards.
In South Australia, I was born. In South Australia, round Cape Horn.
We're bound for South Australia.
Holloway, you're rolling king. Holloway, you'll hear me sing. We're bound for South Australia. As I walked out one morning fair, Heaway, Holloway was there. I met Miss Nancy Blair. We're bound for South Australia. There's just one thing that's on my mind. Heaway, Holloway, that's leaving Nancy Blair behind. We're bound for South Australia. And as we wallop round Cape Horn, Heaway, Holloway, you wish to God you've never been born. We're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you're rolling king. Heaway, Holloway, Holloway, you'll hear me sing. We're bound for South Australia. Australia, I was born in South Australia, round Cape Horn. In South Australia, I was born. We're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you're rolling king. Heave away, Holloway, Holloway, you'll hear me sing. We're bound for South Australia. Holloway, you're rolling king. Heave away, Holloway, Holloway, you'll hear me sing. We're bound for South Australia. In South Australia, I was born. Heave away, Holloway, in South Australia, round Cape Horn. We're bound for South Australia. In South Australia, I was born. Heave away, Holloway, in South Australia, round Cape Horn. We're bound for South Australia.